You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. If you're looking for some encouragement, words of hope, and maybe a laugh or two, that's exactly what Richard wants to share with you today. We know life can get pretty busy and complicated, so we're truly grateful you've chosen to take a break and listen to the program. Now, if you're not able to hang out with us for the entire program, you can always pick it back up at our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, you can find all of Richard's talks right there waiting just for you, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Mrs. Job. So, turn into your Bibles to the book of Job. A lot of people go looking for a job and end up there and go, well, that's not what it's about. So, but there is a book called Job, Mrs. Job. So Job chapter 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil. Okay, this guy was a hoss. This guy was the guy, and it literally says that here in a minute. And 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. Also, his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, which means 1,000 oxen, 500 female goats, and a very large household. So this man was the greatest of all the people in the East. So he's amazing. Godly, wealthy, 10 kids, 7 sons, 3 daughters. And his sons would go and feast in their houses, each on his appointed day, and would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. So it was, when the days of feasting had run their course, that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. So he's not taking care of just of himself, but these are grown children, their own homes, and they're throwing these parties, what are these feasts, and they would go to each other's brother's house, whatever, make the rounds, and he's like, well, maybe something went wrong. There's sin in their heart. They curse God in their heart, and I'm going to offer 10 sacrifices, one for each kid. Thus, Job did regularly. This was not a one-time deal. This was his life. Now, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them, and the Lord said to Satan. So remember this, and you're not going to like this if you've never heard this, and I've gone over some of this, I'm aware. The Lord said to Satan, so this is God bringing this stuff up. From where do you come from? So Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back on it. And the Lord said to Satan, so in this meeting, and you say, what in the world's going on? I don't understand. I can't explain these meetings. How does Satan get into God's presence and what's up with this? I know Satan can't do anything without God's permission. Which don't, say, oh yeah, I believe that. Yeah, that's going to mess you up too. So be careful jumping on that. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? So brings him up. Don't bring me up. Here's my boy. Shoot at him. Have you considered my servant Job that there is none like him on the earth? He is the guy. A blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil, like was described above. So Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for nothing? Well, of course he fears you. Have you not made, now look at this imagery. Have you not made a hedge around him? How does Satan know that God has put a hedge around Job? Because God had a hedge around Job. Protection. Why do you think more stuff doesn't happen to you? You pray for God's protection. If you pray specifically, literally for a hedge of protection, there's a hedge of protection. So now Satan's bringing up, well, sure, he's got it made. Have you not made a hedge around him? Not just him. Now there's another hedge around his household, around all that he has on every side. So everything associated with Job is hedged in. We can't get to him and his stuff and his peeps. You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now, I got a suggestion, God. Stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. So we hear people say, well, GD somebody. We throw these words, put God and the word damn together. But now what Satan is after, and this will, you'll see it again in a minute, what Satan is after here is he's hoping that something will happen to Job and all of the GDs that we push out there to people will now go his direction. And now it's GDG. It's we're wanting like God to damn himself. And the Lord said to Satan, oh, this is so crazy when God speaks, what happens? Behold, all that he has is in your power, only do not lay a hand on his person. Him physically, everything else is fair game. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Now there was a day. This is a very interesting little phrase here. Do you feel like there was a day in your life? You look back over your life and all of a sudden, like, what happened? There was a day and like all hell broke loose. Someone unleashed the Kraken. There was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. So you think the devil doesn't have a plan? He's been given permission and he's going to do maximum harm and will calculate how to do that. So what does he do? They're going to feast in each other's houses. But there was a day when they're all in the oldest brother's house, keep tracking, and a messenger in their oldest brother's house, and a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. Animal's gone. I'm the only servant left to come and communicate this to you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I have alone escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, the Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, your sons and your daughters were, now so far it's just property. It's catastrophic, but it's just property. A tornado, hurricanes hit people's property. They stand out in front of the rubble and go, man, we lost everything, but we're still alive. He's still speaking. Another came, your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you. Now, I got no words. I've been processing this for a while. You go back and watch a movie like Saving Private Ryan. Three brothers are dead. They're trying to find Private Ryan so that his mom does not experience the grief of four sons. And then the general in the movie pulls out a letter by Abraham Lincoln, written to a mom in the Civil War, I believe, who had lost five sons. And you hear him reading that letter. And you just go, there's no way. There's no way a woman, there's no way a man, there's no way a family could process, absorb losing five sons. But if in one day, all your possessions and your seven sons and three daughters, all your servants, they're dead. Everybody's dead. You say, well, what would you do? I'm about to show you what the baddest man on the planet did. Then Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, fell to the ground and worshiped. Now, here's part of what this is all about. Finding Jesus, walking with Jesus, getting tight with Jesus, hearing his voice. He speaks, yes, sir, thank you, sir. You get in a groove and you are obedient. You're a servant of the Most High God. You're his child. You're his obedient child. He loves you. You love him. You love yourself. You love other people the way you love yourself. And you're going. Because you don't know what he's going to allow. And you say, but it's all going good. I got my hedge in place. Nothing can go wrong. And then something goes catastrophically wrong. And it's in that moment that you find out what you got. Now, people twist off. You say, well, what if this happens to somebody? And they twist off and they curse God. What does God do? He says, if you're a Christian, he'll never leave you or forsake you, right? So there's a way back. But I'm suggesting brace for impact and be ready to hold on no matter what. Now you say, well, that's easier said than done. I get that, and I'm about to read you some more verses. So what is his first reaction? Falls to the ground, worships. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. So there's no God, why did you do this? His initial reaction, you think, wow, that's why God picked him. That's why God brought him up in the meeting with Satan. And he's the guy. And by the way, nothing, not a word yet from Mrs. Job. But remember in this story, I refer to her as Mrs. Job because we don't have his last name. Mrs. Job just lost all this too. Mrs. Job just lost her 10 children. 10 children. Not a word from her yet. Job chapter 2. Again, there was a day. We don't need another day. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Dude, stop bringing the guy up. He's barely recovering possibly from losing everything. His children are dead. Give him a minute. That there's none like him on the earth. Now, this is a strange thing for me to even have a category like this. In those meetings, if my name came up, would God's thought be, man, that's my girl. That's my guy. I'm proud of this guy. He's what? Blameless, upright, fears God, shuns evil. God was proud of Job. And then the next phrase, and still he holds fast to his integrity. Although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause. So Satan answered and said to the Lord, skin for skin, pushes it to another level. Yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. Yeah, I took his possessions. You gave me permission to do all that. But skin for skin, baby, you let me touch him personally and he will curse you. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life. Now think about this. God gave Satan permission to do anything he wanted to Job except killing. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. I guess that's what the devil thought would do the trick. Boils, full body boils, sole of your feet to the top of your head. And Job here, and he took for himself a potsherd, a piece of pottery, with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. And then Mrs. Job finally speaks up. And before she says what she's about to say, let me say this. How'd she survive? Why did the devil not take her out? Now, this is what you don't want to be the answer. And this could be as a man or a woman in a relationship. Mrs. Job might have been of more use to Satan alive than dead. So she speaks up, and what does she say? Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. And what is all this has been about? Satan, he'll curse you to your face twice. He'll curse you to your face. God comes back and says, he still holds fast to his integrity. And she says, how in the world, basically, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Job, curse God and die. Now, from the story, nothing has happened to her physically. The same thing has happened to her that happened to Job in terms of loss. But she's not been hit with these boils. You say, well, but she was a cold-blooded person. Be careful sizing people up in the midst of grief. You don't know who somebody is. You don't know how you react. Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. She finally speaks. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Now, I don't think he's being mean to his wife. He's still leading his wife. Now, when Job's three friends heard of this adversity that had come upon him, each one came from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite, for they had made an appointment together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they raised their eyes from afar off and did not recognize him, covered with boils, on top of losing everything, they lifted up their voices and wept, and each one tore his robe, sprinkled dust on his head toward heaven. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days, 7 nights. No one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. So how did they make it through this? The last little piece, three friends show up. But Job, in spite of Mrs. Job saying some of the things she said, made it through together. And you say, well, we can read about this. We're looking back on this, and we see, well, that's what happened. Satan comes to a meeting. God brings him up. The hedges are pulled down. All this happens. I don't want this. I don't want anything to do with this. Don't bring me up. Don't come for me. Don't give him permission. Now, I'm going to read you a few of these really quick, lest we put Job on too high a pedestal. Go to Job chapter 3, verse 1. And I recommend being inspired by Job and his not giving in and not cursing God, all of that. But also be aware that God understands when we are under attack, when we are suffering, when we are grieving, when all hell breaks loose, these thoughts come to human beings. Job 3:1, after this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job spoke and said, may the day perish on which I was born, and the night in which it was said, a male child is conceived. May that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor the light shine upon it. I wish I'd never been born, never been conceived. He goes back to conception. Job 10:18. Why then have you brought me out of the womb? Oh, that I had perished and no eye had seen me. I would have been as though I had not been. I would have been carried from the womb to the grave. So Mrs. Job is one thing. What is the Mrs. Job? So what do you do? In this case, it's a husband who's suffering, but she's also suffering as well. The best advice I can give you on this, stay close to him and stay close to each other. I deal with people who lose children, one child, not 10 children, but one is enough. And some of them don't make it. You say, well, how does that happen? I'm not shocked when it happens. Their collective grief is too great. Their individual grief is too great. They do some stupid things sometimes. Don't move away from each other in suffering, in pain, in when you get attacked. Get closer than ever. Stay together. Lock arms. Don't make each other the enemy. Fight forward together. Don't fight each other. You will never move forward fighting each other. Amen. Now go to Job chapter 42. And I didn't read you all this other stuff. His three friends are quiet for 7 days and 7 nights. And then they start talking. And then you got the whole book of Job. If they had kept their mouth shut, it'd be about 4 chapters. But they start accusing him. Oh, you know, maybe there's sin in your life, right? That's not what happened. He's a righteous, blameless man. That's not what happened here. So they get through all those chapters of Job. He's upset. They're asking questions, trying to figure out what happened to him. Job 42:1. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do everything and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You asked, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. He starts thinking about what he's just said. I've quoted you some of it. And he's like, ooh, might not should have said that. Be thrilled that God is merciful and gracious and doesn't remember and quote back to you everything you ever said like your husband or wife does. Therefore, I've uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Listen, please, and let me speak. You said, I will question you, and you shall answer me. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. And so it was, after the Lord had spoken these words to Job, that the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is arisen against you and your two friends, for you have not spoken to me what is right, as my servant Job has. Now, therefore, take for yourselves 7 bulls and 7 rams. Go to my servant Job and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering. And my servant Job shall pray for you, for I will accept him, lest I deal with you according to your folly, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. So Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite went and did as the Lord commanded them, for the Lord had accepted Job. And this is not what this is about today, but verse 10 is where everything turns around. The loss, everything hinges on 42:10. Look what turned Job's whole situation around. And the Lord restored Job's losses when he prayed for his friends who had been throwing him under the bus for multiple chapters. Indeed, the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. Then all his brothers, all his sisters, all those who had been his acquaintances before came to him, ate food with him in his house, and they consoled him and comforted him for all the adversity that the Lord had brought upon him. Each one gave him a piece of silver, each a ring of gold. Now the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginnings, for he had 14,000 sheep, double the number, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, 1,000 female donkeys. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. And this is one of my favorite things in the whole book. And this is where Mrs. Job comes in. Because apparently, I'll read you in a second here, he lived 140 years after this. And I don't know how long this took, but the estimate is maybe he lived a couple hundred years. And these old people are still getting together. Right? All this grief, all this loss, physical suffering, pain. And Mrs. Job is still willing to be with Job, and these babies start being born. And what's interesting about this, usually in the Bible, sons are highlighted. There's 10 kids born, and only three, we only have the names of three, and they're all girls. And the first one's name, look at this, he called the name of the first Jemima. So what's the word Jemima mean? Dove, daylight. These are not words of calamity. These people name their kids about what was going on. There's daylight. There's a future. There's a hope. Yeah, bad things happened. God allowed it. I don't know why. But we're not dead. And we're going to go forward together. The name of the second, Kezia, which means a type of fragrant spice similar to cinnamon. These are no more than a teaspoon at a time, but these are good things. What's the next one? Karen Hapuk, which means horn of eye paint or horn of beauty, referring to a cosmetic container used for applying eye makeup. And then keep reading about these women. In all the land were found no women so beautiful as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brothers, which normally didn't happen. The boys got everything, their girls didn't. Split, where the girls were included. After this, Job lived 140 years and saw his children and grandchildren of 4 generations. So Job died, old and full of days.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the Talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellistalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
You say, well, but he had trouble. I got trouble. You got trouble. You don't want that kind of trouble. And then it turns out we are the bride. So what's the Mrs. Job in our case as the bride? To prepare ourselves. Look over here really quick. Go back to Revelation 19 and go down to 7. Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. I don't recommend trying suffering without Jesus. but you can get through about anything with him. You got trouble coming, like you don't have any idea what kind of trouble's coming if you don't have Jesus, because your trouble turns out to be hell, and there's no getting out of there. So just a simple conversation from your heart, let him move in. And then no matter what he allows, no matter what comes your way, you don't just have God with you anymore. Now you got God in you. And greater is he who's in me than he who's in the world.
Thanks for tuning in today to Richard Ellis Talks. With the busy schedule everyone has these days, it means the world to us that you would take this time to listen. Let us know how it has touched your heart by calling us at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. One last thing, Richard Ellis Talks is a daily program, but also has daily costs. And being a listener-supported program means we rely on the financial partnership of our listeners, which means you. Maybe you've given to this ministry before or have waited for the right time. Well, we believe that these talks with Richard are making a difference in your life. So this is how you can make a difference to ours. You can contribute by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or at our website, richardellistalks.com. Thank you for your very generous gifts. It truly means so much to us. God bless, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.